Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, June 7th, 2022, Education section. Midland College breaks ground for new pre-K academy. During the next 12 months, Midland College will increase its main campus footprint by building a facility to expand its existing pre-K academy and house its growing education program, which includes a bachelor's degree in early childhood, third grade teacher preparation. Last week, the college broke ground for the new 60,000 square foot, two-story structure. The new building will increase the current pre-K academy partnership between MC and MISD from 68 seats to 288 seats, thereby fulfilling a dire need in the community for quality pre-K education. In addition, it will also provide a home for Midland College's new early childhood education bachelor's degree program. Anticipated building completion date is fall of 2023. The Midland College Pre-K Academy and Center for Teaching Excellence addresses two major challenges facing our community: a shortage of quality early childhood opportunities and a shortage of teachers, President Steve Thompson said. The project is evidence of Midland College's commitment to provide education and training that will help our community grow and prosper. Project architect engineering firm is Park Hill. Construction contractor is Adolphson and Peterson Construction. Fundraising for the building is 90% complete, with lead gifts of $10 million each from Permian Strategic Partnership and Scarborough Foundation. Other major donors include Abel Hanger Foundation, the Beal Foundation, and Henry Foundation. For a list of current project donors, visit midland.edu/groundbreaking. Greenwood Destination Imagination Team reaches global finals. Gifted and talented students from Greenwood High School and James R. Brooks Middle School in Greenwood recently returned from a trip to Kansas City, where they competed in the global finals for the Destination Imagination Creative Problem Solving competition. The Greenwood team advanced to the finals after competing in the regional competition in Lubbock and the state competition in Arlington. At the global tournament, students competed against teams from as far away as China. Students on the high school team are Harley Keller, Samantha Ivy, Brett Davis, Marcella Tedder, Zach Ribolt, Olivia Agee, Aiden McClure, and team manager Kale Bingham. The middle school team is comprised of students Ashton Adams, Audrey Glass, Aiden Sorley, Cassidy Foley, Kayan Morgan, and Jansen Enriquez. The Greenwood brought home sixth place overall and was fifth in the instant challenge. These students have been involved in DI since they entered the GT program in elementary school, but this is the pilot year for DI at the high school level in Greenwood. Bynum earns $4,650 from philanthropy groups. Trinity School's seniors in servant leadership and philanthropy and Greenwood High and Legacy High School students in philanthropy have donated $4,650 to Bynum School. We're so thankful for the students' generosity, Bynum Development Director Tracy Bush said. SIP and SLP are educating our future leaders and philanthropists, and these students will continue to make an impact in the lives of others. Each year, students in the SIP and SLP programs learn about philanthropy and how they can use their time, talent, and treasure to impact their community. Students explore social causes, learn to advocate for organizations they care about, and evaluate local nonprofits through the process. Ultimately, students work together to choose local nonprofits they deem worthy of receiving a grant. At the end of each school year, the students celebrate this meaningful process with special award ceremonies. These rituals help students celebrate the year's accomplishments, reflect on their growth, and reward the nonprofit of their choice. The first SIP program was established in 1997 at Midland College through the leadership and funding of the Abel Hanger Foundation. The Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust began co-funding the Midland programs in 2007. Today, there are 7 programs in the Permian Basin, 2 college programs, and 5 high school programs. Graduating classes. Bynum School's graduation ceremony took place on May 19th. This year's graduating class was comprised of 4 students from left to right, Kate Martin, Jacob Padilla, Bailey Westfall, and Peyton Abney. The Hillcrest School graduates for 2022 are Colton Gregg, Anna Alsop, and Lindsay Edgar. Hillcrest is a private, non-for-profit, CONIA-accredited school for students with learning differences in grades K through 12. It specializes in helping students with dyslexia and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder reach their maximum potential. It recently celebrated its 29th year in Midland. Declining enrollment is a wake-up call for public education. A commentary by Michael Bloomberg. A recent national analysis contained a deeply disturbing finding that has generated little public discussion when it should be causing an outcry. Nearly 1.3 million students have left public schools since the pandemic began. Most states have seen enrollment declines for 2 straight years. In New York City, K-12 enrollment has dropped by an astounding 9%. Given that state education funding formulas rely on student population numbers, a large reduction in students will lead to a corresponding reduction in school budgets. That's the law of supply and demand. Otherwise, at this rate, the public will soon be paying teachers to lead half-empty classrooms. The message to educators and elected officials could hardly be clearer. Too many public schools are failing, parents are voting with their feet, and urgent and bold action is needed. Until now, however, the only government response has been to spend more money, too much of which has gone to everyone but our children. Since 2020, Congress has sent an additional $190 billion to schools, in part to help them reopen safely and stave off layoffs. But in many districts, union leaders resisted a return to in-classroom instruction long after it was clear that classrooms were safe. And by and large, remote instruction was a disaster. By one analysis, the first year of the pandemic left students an average of 5 months behind in math and 4 months behind in reading, with much larger gaps for low-income schools. It's abundantly clear that money was far from the biggest challenge facing public schools. The U.S. spends more per pupil on public education than virtually any other country, and many districts have struggled to spend all the federal funds they've received. Others have splurged on sports. Now, after students have fled public schools in record numbers, states are paying more to educate fewer children. That might have been acceptable if students were showing great improvement. Instead, we're paying more for failure. Charter schools educate 7% of all public school students, yet they receive less than 1% of total federal spending on K-12 education. As more parents opt out of traditional district schools, that imbalance should be corrected as charters struggle to afford the teachers they need to serve their growing student populations, often in low-income communities. Recently, union influence over the Federal Department of Education led to an outrageous proposal to erect new barriers to funding charter schools. Instead of making it easier for educators to open more charters to meet parental demand, the DOE proposed to do the opposite. After a bipartisan backlash, there are signs that the department may reconsider the proposal. The White House should insist on it and go further by treating public charter school students as equals in terms of funding and insisting that traditional district schools embrace the accountability standards that have made charters so popular with parents. That might lead some parents who have opted for homeschool or parochial schools to revisit their options and help stave off deep cuts to schools with declining populations. Otherwise, the shameful failures of the public school system will continue, hurting another generation of the most vulnerable children. For the U.S. to remain the world's strongest economy and to make any substantial progress on matters of racial justice, that is not an outcome Americans can afford to accept. The new enrollment data sends a stark signal. Schools will have to adjust to dropping enrollments, either by getting smaller or by getting better. You can't lose the students and keep the teachers.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Thursday, June 9th, 2022. This is the Business and Oil page. UAE says oil prices nowhere near peak yet. By Sama El Wardani, Mohammed Taysir, and Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Oil prices are nowhere near their peak as an impending rebound in Chinese demand threatens to strain a global market already pinched by tight supplies, said a key OPEC member, United Arab Emirates. The comments serve as an acknowledgement that last week's decision by the OPEC Plus coalition to bolster output will give consumers little respite from the soaring cost of energy this summer. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries is struggling to restore production as planned, with spare capacity confined to just a few members, the UAE minister conceded. With the pace of consumption we have, we are nowhere near the peak because China is not back yet, Energy Minister Suhail al-Mazuri said at a conference on Wednesday in Jordan. China will come with more consumption. Al-Mazuri warned that without more investment across the globe, OPEC Plus can't guarantee sufficient oil supplies as demand fully recovers from the coronavirus pandemic. Prices can reach unseen levels if Russian oil and gas is completely taken off the market, he said. OPEC Plus agreed last week to open its oil taps a little faster in the summer months. That modest supply boost amounts to just 0.4% of global demand over July and August, and comes after several months in which the group has struggled to hit its production targets. We're lagging by almost 2.6 million barrels a day, and that's a lot, Al-Mazuri said. Only Saudi Arabia and the UAE have significant volumes of idle production capacity, but even that is only enough to offset a portion of the supply gap created by sanctions on Russia. The situation is not very encouraging when it comes to the quantities that we can bring, Al-Mazuri said. OPEC Secretary General Mohammed Barkindo echoed the UAE's comments, stressing the lack of spare capacity in the group. With the exception of three members, all are maxed out, he told Bloomberg, expanding on remarks given at a conference hosted by RBC Capital in New York. The world needs to come to terms with this brutal fact. Oil tops $122 as U.S. inventory data highlights fuel supply crunch, by Julia Fanzeres, Bloomberg. Oil maintained its gains after U.S. government data showed crude inventories in the largest storage hub and gasoline stockpiles dropped, offering little relief to concerns about a global supply crunch. West Texas Intermediate futures rose above $122 a barrel, trading near a three-month high. Inventories at the nation's biggest storage hub at Cushing, Oklahoma, fell 1.59 million barrels last week, according to an Energy Information Administration report Wednesday. Gasoline inventories also dropped while demand rose. This week's government inventory report showed improvement in implied gasoline demand back to five-year averages, said Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management. Both technical and fundamental factors read positive, she said, noting WTI appears to be holding $120, a level it's failed to maintain over the past week. Prices rose earlier in the session on signals that China's economy is recovering. The prospect of Chinese demand improving means crude prices could keep rising, The UAE energy minister said earlier today at a conference in Jordan. The amount of oil that producers can add to the market is not very encouraging, Suhail Al-Amzuri added, highlighting concerns about spare production capacity in the oil market. The comments came after banks, including Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Morgan Stanley, underlined calls for higher prices in the coming months. Shrinking inventories or refined products at the start of summer underscore a fundamentally tight supply situation. The four-week average for gasoline demand rose to 9 million barrels a day for the first time this year following Memorial Day weekend, which is the traditional kickoff to the summer driving season. Demand is rising even as the national average price for gasoline, already at a record, approaches $5 a gallon. Diesel prices are surging faster than gasoline, with an unusually hefty premium for this time of year, with the rest of the world is relying on the U.S. to supply the most widely used oil product in Europe. An EU measure to forbid purchases of Russian refined petroleum products in the coming months is exacerbating an already tight fuel market. The oil market has maintained its upward momentum this year as economies rebounded from the pandemic, though Russia's invasion of Ukraine and a virus resurgence in China has led to extreme volatility. Beijing continues to roll back its COVID-19 curbs as infection rates ease. Last week, OPEC Plus lifted output by more than it had previously planned, though the group has struggled to meet its targets in recent months. Natural gas prices plunge after fire at Texas LNG terminal, by Christina Burma and Gerson Freitas Jr., Bloomberg. U.S. natural gas prices tumbled after a fire broke out at a Texas export terminal, threatening to leave supplies of the fuel stranded in shale basins despite surging overseas demand. The fire is still burning at the Freeport LNG terminal in Quintana, about 65 miles south of Houston, according to a recording on the Brazosport Community Awareness and Emergency Response Hotline. The incident occurred around 11:40 a.m. Wednesday, and an investigation is ongoing, Brazosport CAER said in a tweet. Freeport receives about 2 billion cubic feet of gas, or roughly 2.5% of output from the lower 48 U.S. states. The blaze could have a significant impact on global supplies of LNG as Europe clamors for cargoes after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. U.S. gas stockpiles, meanwhile, are well below normal for this time of year, while prices are trading at the highest since 2008. The fire is going to curtail exports and alleviate some of the strain on U.S. supplies, said John Kilduff, a partner at hedge fund Again Capital in New York. U.S. consumers should benefit from lower prices, but Europe and Asia will probably pay higher prices. U.S. natural gas futures for July delivery slid as much as 9.3% to $8.427 per million British thermal units in New York, after earlier rising as much as 4%. This is the local and state page. DPS says 68-year-old crane man latest to die on regional roads. A 68-year-old crane man died Tuesday afternoon after another vehicle collided into his vehicle while he was parked on the shoulder of Texas 329 west of Crane. DPS also reported that the accident happened after 4:12 p.m., when Abraham Efrenin was parked in his 2020 Toyota Prius on the shoulder of Texas 329 facing west. Another vehicle, a Ford F-250, was traveling westbound on State Highway 329 and for an unknown reason partially drove onto the improved shoulder and struck the Prius from the rear. The accident happened 4 miles west of Crane. Efrenin was not wearing a seatbelt. Police arrest Odessa man in fatal Martin County hit-and-run crash. An Odessa man is in jail after being arrested for his alleged role in an accident with a motorcyclist Monday in Martin County. Christopher Anthony Carman, 28, was arrested and booked into the Martin County Jail for felony accident involving personal injury or death, according to DPS. Officials reported in a news release that preliminary information showed that Carman was driving a Freightliner truck tractor with trailer west on Texas 176. When Carman attempted to turn north onto County Road 2601, he struck the rear of a 2009 Honda motorcycle. Operating the motorcycle was Paul Anthony Goldbert of 59 of San Antonio. Carman did not stop and render aid, and he fled the scene of the crash, according to DPS. Goldbert succumbed to his injuries sustained in the collision, eventually being pronounced dead at Midland Memorial Hospital. The accident took place less than 1 mile west of Tarzan around 1:10 p.m. Monday afternoon. Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion, Thursday, June 9th. Rockhounds Hards earns well-deserved call-up to Oakland. For the first time in my 26 years in Midland, I couldn't be happier about a Midland Rockhound being called up to the Oakland A's. And Bob Hartz, the longtime voice of AA baseball in Midland, you so deserved it. No offense to all the players that have come in through Midland, and I have no doubt there have been some really good guys, but you aren't radio announcer Bob Hartz, the consummate professional, the Midland sports institution, and one of the nicest guys I have ever met. When I was a sports writer, I enjoyed covering a Rockhounds game because Bob delivered with his notes, packages, his broadcast played in the press box, and every once in a while, he would disagree with the official score on a play. What ensued was quality entertainment. But Bob, most of all, has been the voice of baseball in Midland. Whether the Angels were playing a classic 17-16 game in the old Christensen Stadium, or the Rockhounds were winning titles in the newer home for AA baseball, there was always one constant, Bob Hartz, and he was going to make the game sound good. If there were 100 people in the stadium, he would point out the two or three rallying the troops. And when there was a home run for the home team, whether it was Glossonian or more pedestrian, it was a sidewalk souvenir. He doesn't just paint a picture like a broadcaster is supposed to do. He just doesn't know the sport better than anyone else not participating in the game. Hards has this ability to connect with you like only a great broadcaster can. When Bob calls the game, the wins are a little sweeter and the losses hurt just a little bit more. That is because your team is his team. And tomorrow, when you turn on the broadcast, he is there again. That old friend, just having another conversation about baseball with you. Bob is how baseball is supposed to sound. Maybe that is why when the Reporter-Telegram put all the radio and TV personalities in a March Madness-style bracket a few years ago, Bob Hartz won it in a landslide. Dallas Braden, a member of the Oakland A's TV team, said during the TV broadcast that Bob dedicated his life to the craft, to the game of baseball, and that Bob has been a community pillar and mainstay in Midland for the Rockhounds organization. Braden was right about that, just like he was right when he said, "You spend 30 seconds talking to the guy and you understand. Yep, I have met the nicest human on earth." Well said, Mr. Braden. That was perfect. Bob, enjoy your time with the big club. There are a lot of people back home who can't wait to hear all about it because our favorite Rockhound of all time has been called up to the show. By Stuart Doreen, editor.
Hysterectomy and oophorectomy Dear Dr. Roach, would you recommend a prophylactic hysterectomy and oophorectomy for a 52-year-old overweight woman to address the increased cancer risk from long-term obesity? JT, answer, surgery to prevent ovarian cancer is considered in those who are at the highest risk of ovarian cancer. This means those with genetic syndromes, BRCA1 and 2 mutations, Lynch syndrome, and some other less common genetic variants such as BRIP1, who have lifetime risk of ovarian cancer, including fallopian tube and peritoneal cancer, of up to 46%. The average woman has about a 1.5% risk of developing ovarian cancer in her lifetime. Obesity might increase that risk to 1.8%. There are clear risks of doing this type of surgery, and the risk of surgery outweighs the benefit in average risk women, but for those with mild risk factors like obesity. Some experts will consider prophylactic surgery if the woman needs surgery anyway, such as removing the ovaries as well during a hysterectomy for fibroids, but never as a standalone surgery. Cancer of the uterus, endometrial cancer, is likewise not recommended for prevention via hysterectomy in average risk women or even in women with obesity who are at higher risk. Endometrial cancer risk can be reduced through weight loss. Bariatric surgery, for example, reduces risks by 50% to 80%. I don't advocate for surgical prophylaxis except in women at highest risk due to genetic causes like Lynch syndrome. Women should report any abnormal bleeding promptly.
Dear Abby, for Thursday, June 9th. Daughter tires of mother's commentary on relationship. Dear Abby, I am a 29-year-old woman in a healthy, loving relationship with my boyfriend of 2.5 years. We talk about marriage and kids and are committed to each other. We know we are each other's special one. He recently bought a home and we live together. My issue is with my mother. I feel she won't be happy with me until I'm married and have children. She and Dad met and were married within 6 months, so to her, any relationship that lasts longer than that without marriage or an engagement must not be the real deal. It has been extremely frustrating over the past couple of years. She slips in judgmental comments all the time and clearly doesn't respect my relationship with the man I have chosen. If I try to defend my life and our relationship, she says I'm too defensive and must be unhappy. If I say nothing, which has been my approach for the past 6 months or so, her snide comments continue. I want a good relationship with her, but I am not sure where to go from here. Marriage and kids are in our future, but not for some time. We are enjoying our own timeline. Help. It's my life in Colorado. Dear IML, at 29, you are well into adulthood, so perhaps it's time to draw the line. Tell your mother you know she loves her, you, and is concerned with your welfare, but you do not plan to marry anyone on her timeline. Then say, calmly, that her comments are hurtful and you need her to quit the needling, or she will be seeing a lot less of you. Be prepared to follow through. Dear Abby, I have wrestled with this for a year. I thought I had a good friend. I had a pacemaker implanted, and 8 months later, I broke my elbow. Both times I was hospitalized. Not once did she come to see me or send a card, even though she is a card lover. I overlooked it until my son's death made me rethink our friendship. She sent me some fruit, but didn't make one call to see how we were doing. No visitation, nothing. She didn't send a sympathy card either. I now regard her as selfish, and I can no longer bring myself to be friends with her. We all make mistakes, that's true. But 3 times with no support from her is more than I can accept. I now feel we weren't friends at all. Am I wrong? We have many dear friends who were there when we needed them. They cried with us, consoled us, brought food, stayed with us. Are my feelings valid? Abandoned in Florida. Dear Abandoned, where feelings are concerned, there is no right or wrong. Sometimes people feel extremely uncomfortable about what they should say or do when a difficult situation arises, such as an illness, an accident, or a death. That your friend made herself absent when you needed her support is unfortunate. Not knowing her, I can't guess her reason, and neither can you. So before you abandon her, you should ask that question.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.